This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider.
You're listening to The Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the BetRivers Network.
Welcome, everyone, to the latest edition of The Bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Coming up on today's podcast, spend a couple of minutes talking about the Red Hot Guardians. But the draft is tomorrow. We're going to talk about what's happening at the top of the draft. We're going to talk about what's happening for the Browns in the second round. We're going to talk about the Browns in general. Deshaun Watson, Nick Chubb, the offensive line, need versus best player available. Guys moving up the board, down the board. A lot of draft talk with senior draft analyst from Our Lads, David Syvertson. He's going to join me in just a couple of minutes right here in the bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by Bet Rivers.
You're in the bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.
Folks, let me tell you something. The Cleveland Guardians are smoking right now. They are sizzling hot. They are the best team in baseball right now. They have the best record. They have the best run differential. How about Ben Lively last night? His journeyman pitchers had two excellent starts for the Guardians, bunch of strikeouts. Gave up one run in his last inning. Gave that home run in the seventh. The Guardians come back for him, scored two in the seventh. Ramirez homers later. They tack on one late. And the Guardians win 4-1. They have been unbelievable to start this season. Their 17-6 record is tied for the best in franchise history 23 games into the season. The last time they did it, 1999. We know that team was really good. The plus 55 run differential, as I said, the best in baseball. 12 runs better than the Atlanta Braves. The Guardians have allowed just 73 runs this season. That is the best in all of baseball. Offensively, let me give you some numbers here. 4 weeks into the season. Guardians are fourth in runs per game, sixth in hits per game, tied for 13th in home runs per game. Pitching, they're third in earned runs against per game, fifth in walks plus hits per game, and third in Ks per nine innings. They are doing it on both sides. Even with the injury to Bieber and McKenzie not pitching well, and Bibee and Allen not been as good as he expected, still overall, the bullpen's been tremendous. Lively has come in, given two good starts. Curry gave him one good start. Carrasco's been serviceable, and Bibee's been okay. He's just not been as good as we thought. If they could just get McKenzie straight, that's a big if. The Guardians, I mean, they are just cooking. Cooking with gas. Second in runs scored, total runs scored in the American League. Only the Orioles have scored more with 130. The Guardians at 128. They've won five in a row. They have a 3.5-game lead in the division over both Kansas City and Detroit. How about the White Sox are already 14 games out? 14! Gotta love it. They may be the worst team. They may shatter records. They'll play tonight again against Boston. Carlos Carrasco against Cooper Criswell. And then tomorrow afternoon to wrap up the series, Tristan McKenzie against Brian Bello. And then the Guardians head on a road trip to Atlanta over the weekend, and Houston early next week. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, senior draft analyst David Syvertson of Our Lads. He joins me to break it all down next in the bullpen with Adam the Bull.
You're in the bullpen with Adam the Bull.
All right, welcome back. It's the bullpen with Adam the Bull. And, of course, Thursday, tomorrow, is the NFL draft. And usually in Cleveland, we're starting to talk about the NFL draft in November, but things have been different the last couple of years. The Browns haven't had a first-round pick. They were actually a pretty good team last year. And so we have not spent nearly as much time as we have in the past. But this is it. This is the week, and although, as I said, the Browns don't have a first-round pick for one more year this year, They have a second round pick, which they actually have not had the last 2 years because they've traded that away too. The trade last year was not a really good one. They traded Elijah Moore or for Elijah Moore giving up a second round pick and dropping down to the third. Joining us now to talk about all things draft, including the craziness of the quarterbacks in the first round, senior draft analyst from Our Lads, David Syvertson. David, how you doing? Thank you for joining me.
Adam, I'm doing great. Down to the home stretch. It's about 48 hours away from, I think we're about 48 hours away. It's been a whirlwind of a week, but doing really well. Yeah. Really excited to see what's going to go down in a couple nights, both with the Browns and around the league.
David, when I hear media members this time of year say a guy is falling on the draft board, a guy is moving up the draft board, I tend to not believe that that's true. Maybe they got information from somebody, and so they think the guy's moved up, but I don't believe there's drastic movements on anybody's draft board this time of year. Am I right or no?
No, you're right. I think the one difference now, as opposed to, you know, even just a month or two away ago, is the fact that the coaches are now involved in the scouting process, right? The scouts, the scouting directors, they run the show for up until now. Now that these draft meetings are occurring the week of the draft, the week before the draft, that's when the coaches start to get involved. And some teams do it different than others. But in terms of a player's grade actually moving that much this close to the draft, it's more about other guys just kind of catching up to to the reality of the situation.
How would you explain, I mean, this is probably pretty complicated, but I'll throw it your way anyway. How would you explain, like, let me give you the Browns for an example.
Yeah.
Since Andrew Berry has been the GM, I think overall he's done a solid job. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say spectacular, but he's done a solid job. Mm-hmm. He seems, whenever he makes a move at cornerback, a position he played in college, he seems to get it right. The Browns have gotten very good value across the board at corner. Whenever they make a move at wide receiver, whether it's been draft or trade outside of Amari Cooper, and I can't give him credit for Amari Cooper. We already knew who he was.
Yeah.
But everything else they've done at wide receiver to this point, we'll see about Jerry Jeudy, has been a disaster. And again, Cedric Tillman, it was only 1 year. Well, I'll give him more time. But Anthony Schwartz and David Bell and Elijah Moore, you know, all not worth the value that they were used for. So how do you explain that? And I'm sure there's an example with every team. Why do you think he's been so good at corner and so lost at wide receiver? Is that an organizational thing, or it's not just him, right?
No, I wouldn't say that's him. I actually think this has a lot to do with coaching, because in a sport like football, you have your coaching staff and all these different positional coaches. And if we track the amount of personnel movement on coaching staffs just as much as we do rosters, and the amount of just lack of continuity that teams have position to position, side of the ball, it's really tough for certain players to constantly progress. I mean, one criticism we can have of the NFL, in contrast to other professional sports leagues, it's not a progression league. It's you get thrown into the fire right away, and some teams simply do this better than others. Some coaches do it better than others. I don't know if this is a Barry problem where they struggle with receivers, but they don't struggle with corners. I think that guy and his staff truly know how to evaluate talent and project them to the NFL. But how well these guys get developed by the coaching staff has more to do with the lack of success of young players transitioning into the NFL.
Which is funny, because the Browns had an overhaul of their offensive coaching staff this season. Yeah. And the only coach that kept his job was the wide receiver coach, Chad O'Shea, where they've struggled the most. So that's kind of interesting that happened.
Yeah, I mean the dynamics of the coaching staff go so much deeper than you know, just players playing well. There's a lot of chemistry and communication and game planning, and even in this process, the scouting. I mean, every team does it different, but I try to stay away from criticizing someone's draft decision, and I look closer to A, the person themselves, the individual, the player, does he really apply himself? But then I also think the coaching staff, you know, how well they actually do in these meeting rooms and developing these players plays a huge part in what we end up seeing happening on the field.
David, one more question in terms of the draft process before we get to the specific players that I'm curious about.
Yeah.
You know, there's always this talk about need versus best player available. As an outsider, as someone who's never been on a professional football team, it never made sense to me to reach on a player for need over best player available. I understand quarterback is, you know, if I'm grading out and I have a quarterback as the 12th best player in the draft, but I need a quarterback, that I get. Now, if he's the 50th player, no, I'm not doing that. But I get moving the line a little bit for quarterback. I don't really get it for any other position. Do teams generally, like, do you think there's a philosophy that, whether it's a wide receiver, whatever it is, that teams all too often draft for need and not taking the best player available? Does that happen too much, do you think, or no?
I do. I think there's a temptation that everyone has to fight draft weekend, that it's an easy situation to take a player at a position of need. But if you take a look back, and we do this all the time at our labs, we go back 5, 6, 7 years, yeah. And that's when I truly evaluate a draft class. I'm not into the next Tuesday morning draft grade. We have to see how these right. guys perform. And something that I've noticed over the years, because I grade every pick from every draft over the past 5 to 6 years, it's the teams that are not leaning so hard into the need that are in the playoffs every single year, because they're simply just gathering more and more talent, the best talent available. And, you know, sometimes these teams, they want to cover a wound that needs stitches with a Band-Aid. That's what they end up doing, and that's what drafting for need is. But if you just do what the Ravens have done, I know it's a sore spot for maybe some Brown fans to hear, but yes. The Ravens do this as well as anyone. They just take the best players available. I mean, back to the Lamar Jackson draft, he was not their first-round pick. It was Hayden Hurst, the tight end, because yeah. they had him graded higher. They didn't go after the need specifically. So the teams that are constantly standing at the end of the year, year after year, and not a flash in the pan, it's always the teams that truly draft the best player available, not just the need.
It's a great point. And the Ravens, as much as we hate them here in Cleveland, we respect them because they yeah. they do a lot of things well. They're well coached. They're well run.
Yep.
Now, the Browns obviously have taken a step forward here after almost 30 years of dismalness. Yep. I think they're well coached now. I think they're well run now. Certainly a lot better than they've been in years past. The Browns, as we talked about, are picking in the second round. They, you know, I look at them and I don't see an obvious, like, I don't know that anybody they draft is going to start. I guess if they took a receiver and he was really great, maybe he's the third receiver over Elijah Moore. I don't know. Maybe at linebacker, I guess it's possible. But when you look at the Browns and their roster and you're thinking, okay, well, let's take the best player available. I know it's hard to project who that's going to be at 54.
Right.
But who are some guys you think that could be in that range that would make sense for the Browns?
You know, I do look at the defensive line, and even though they have stockpiled that group with guys that can get the job done, and they're running 2-3 deep, both inside and outside, which is a great way to build the defense because you got to keep those guys fresh and you have to be prepared for injuries. But the one thing that I notice when I'm looking at the RLAD depth chart is you have four of these guys that are 30-plus years old, and I don't want to go into that season always relying on these guys playing all 17 games. And this is an area of the draft where I feel that you're going to find some really good defensive line talent, especially on the inside, especially from a pass rush perspective, to let some of these guys like Quentin Jefferson and Dalvin Tomlinson, let them be the two gappers, the run stuffers. If they can get one of these three technique pass rushers inside to help complement what they have in Myles Garrett and Za'Darius Smith on the outside, now you have this identity on this defense that can scare Kansas City. I mean, this conference is going to go through Kansas City for the foreseeable future. And the way to combat a pass team like that, that you know they're going to be productive and score points, it's always going to be the pass rush. And there is an amount of three techniques, pass rushing, defensive tackles in this draft class that I project to go in that 30 to 50 range, 30 to 55 range. The Browns can get a really good player there. The couple of names that's more specifically, I like Braden Fisk from Florida State, Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State, Chris Jenkins from Michigan, guys that just have elite athletic ability, but also can make some plays happen against the run.
Yeah, I know a lot of people here want Michael Hall Jr. He's a Buckeye. He's from Northeast Ohio. A lot of people like him. But you got with Jenkins, you got the bloodlines there. So those are some interesting guys. Obviously, wide receiver is a position of depth, too. We've talked about their struggles drafting wide receivers. You know, first of all, what do you think of Cedric Tillman? Do you think he's – like, what do you think his upside is? And who are some of the wide receivers if they go that way around 54?
I like Cedric Tillman. I had a second round grade on him last year, and I want to give him another year. Obviously, he's only played a half a year last year in terms of the amount of times he got on the field. But I never viewed him as a guy that's going to be a true number one. I think he's an okay number two or an excellent number three option in your passing game. So because of that, you have Amari Cooper, who's not going to be around that much longer. And I don't know if he's ever going to be a true number one guy. I'm looking into the second or third round of this draft, and I want to lean into the strength of this draft overall, and that's at wide receiver. Tackle is another spot, offensive tackle, but keeping the conversation at wide receiver and trying to look at their depth chart and saying, hey, what do they not have, and what could they use? I think they could use a vertical threat in this passing game, a guy that can really take the top off an offense. Cedric Tillman is a big possession-type receiver that I do think he can – you know, get the job done. But if you get a guy in here that can really truly take the top off of defense, that's where I think you start opening up things for Elijah Moore, Jerry Jeudy, Amari Cooper. So a guy that I would love to see in a Browns uniform is Troy Franklin from Oregon. He runs at about 6'1", 190, 185, but he is kind of like a Jalen Hyatt type vertical threat who I know the Browns had some interest in last year. That just kind of complements what the Browns have at receiver. So round two, round three area for him. If you strike out there, Tez Walker from North Carolina, very similar athletic profile, a little bit more size. And I think there's a little bit more to chew off in terms of what his actual ceiling is.
David, at the top of the draft, there's been some talk that maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. won't be the first wide receiver. I mean, I guess I'm a little biased because I'm in Northeast Ohio. I'm not, I didn't grow up rooting for the Buckeyes because I grew up in New York, but I watch the Buckeyes all the time. He seems like a no-brainer. Not that the other guys aren't good, but I just feel like I watch this guy play, and I'm like, he's going to be the next short thing at wide receiver. To you, is he a no-brainer, first wide receiver, or no?
He is, and this is just classic paralysis by analysis. at this point, you've watched and talked about these guys so much that you know, the Malik Nabers, you know, passing him, I've never bought into it. I think Marvin Harrison is the most polished wide receiver, sure thing that you have in this class of all players. He's still my number one player in the class overall. I think that there's a little discouragement here that he didn't test athletically, no combine, no pro day, but there's enough tape on him and there's enough GPS tracking data to really analyze how fast he is on the field. And to me, you could say Malik Nabers has a slightly higher ceiling because of what he can do after the catch. But Marvin Harrison's floor is a Pro Bowl receiver. He is going to be a Pro Bowl receiver early on in his career. And he still has the ceiling to be an All-Pro, to be a Hall of Famer. That's the kind of player that you're getting Marvin Harrison. You know he loves the game. You know he's going to work hard. You know, a true number one receiver to me, Adam, is a guy that, you know, it's fourth and four. You're down four. There's 15 seconds left. You're on the 10-yard line. The entire stadium knows where the ball's going. He still finds a way to get the job done. That's Marvin Harrison Jr. Yep.
David Syvertson is with us, senior draft analyst for Our Lads. David, obviously, as always, a lot of quarterbacks moving up to the top of the board, even if they may not be worthy because of how important the position is. From my perspective, and I don't spend my time on this like you do. I'm personally not buying into any of these guys outside of Caleb Williams. I don't know. What do you say? Who do you think is going to be and obviously a lot of it has to do with what team you end up with, the coach, all that plays a role. But how many of these guys do you think are going to be at least Pro Bowl caliber players, if any?
Yes, according to my grading scale, because I do, I project all pro, I project Pro Bowl, I project quality starter, I project backup. I only have two grades for Pro Bowl. One of them is obviously Caleb Williams. The other one is Jaden Daniels. But the concern I have with him is, will he hold up? His pressure to sack ratio, meaning how many times he actually gets pressured and ends up on the ground because of how light he is really high. And that's a number that does translate to the NFL. So that's the one concern. I just think that he does have Lamar Jackson caliber running ability. He's a different athlete. Mm-hmm. He's not as strong as Lamar. But I think he's that kind of player in terms of what he can do for an offense from a dual threat perspective. But I also think he's a little bit more of a polished passer than Lamar was coming out. So I do have that outlook on Jaden Daniels, but I do want to throw the asterisks in there. I'm concerned that he's not going to get up when a Myles Garrett lands on top of him in the pocket. I just don't know if he's going to come up in one piece. But Drake May has a ton to work on mechanically, very inconsistent. JJ McCarthy is just a question mark. I mean, I like him. I actually have him as my quarterback 3 in this class, but it's a guess because he just didn't have to do that much at Michigan. And I love the skill set. I love the mentality. I love the intangibles. But that, if I'm picking a quarterback for a team, I do want a little bit more assurance that he can do it. And I don't want to have as much guesswork. Every player is a guesswork. And you know, over 50% of top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, they don't pan out. I mean, look at this recent draft class. Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields. I mean, you're almost leaning towards the majority of these guys are not working out. So, you know, it's a tough situation. Right now, everyone looks great before we open up the presents and actually start playing with these guys. But Jaden Daniels, to me, just has a special, unique a combination of arm and leg talent that it is hard to find. Then they are protecting these quarterbacks more and more every year. So in terms of him being a little bit weaker physically, it doesn't bother me like it would have a few years ago.
The 2020 draft with Burrow and Herbert and Tua and Hurts and Jordan Love. That's the draft where like they all hit.
Yep. Yep.
But outside of that, I mean, it's been a real crapshoot. There's been more misses than hits.
Yeah. I mean, that class that you just said, that brought the average up substantially.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could talk for an hour about this in terms of like the proper way to build up a quarterback and the proper way to support them. And front offices and coaching staffs, they play such a huge responsibility in doing it right. And this is what I like what Chicago has done. Chicago has set up that roster for Caleb Williams and from a support perspective. So I do believe that these players that we're talking about, May, McCarthy, Daniels, and Caleb, they're good enough to be dudes at the next level, but that's only half of the equation. The other half is the support system that comes from the coaching staff and front office.
Do you have any running backs in this draft with a Pro Bowl caliber grade?
Trey Benson from Florida State. He's the only one. I don't know if I would use a first-round pick on him because of the position he plays. I do love the way he plays. I love his running style. He's got some DeMarco Murray in him. You know, you see the 6'1", 225-pound frame, the fact that he's never fumbled once in his entire career, and you think power back. This guy hit over 22 miles an hour on game day on the field, more than any back in the country. And at 6'1", 225, the guy can move. He's got a different running style. He likes to scoot more, like kind of get in and out of traffic more than open up his stride. But if he does have to open up his stride in the open field, he can get away from guys, and he's done it several times. He only carried the ball, I think, 500 times over his career. So he's not going to be coming into the league with a really banged up. He's an Oregon transfer, and you know those guys are always going after speed backs. I just think his skill set kind of reminds me a little bit of like what Breece Hall is bringing to the Jets right now.
I'm expecting a big year from him this year. David, a couple of current Browns I wanted your thoughts on before we wrap up. Number one, Deshaun Watson. Everybody has thoughts on him. Strictly on the field. Obviously, the guy looked like the second best quarterback in football behind Mahomes for, you know, I guess at that point, maybe still Brady. But when he first played for Houston, when the Browns traded for him, I was on the radio when the news broke, and I was like, for the first time since Bernie Kosar, the Browns have a short thing at quarterback. And I was going nuts, and he's been a disaster here. He's been injured. He's been ineffective. I know he played that nice second half against Baltimore, but it's been way more bad than good.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on him going forward? I mean, nobody knows in terms of mentally what he's going through physically and what's all the off-the-field stuff, but in terms of what you see from a physical standpoint on the field, can this guy get back to being the quarterback he was?
the one word that comes to mind, he just looks rusty. And you kind of have to understand that, right? You take some time away from the game, especially at this position, right? Where you're not just relying on talent. There's footwork, there's mechanics, there's the mental component. There's new surroundings, new offense, new offensive linemen. I want to give him some grace, but 2024, it has to be a year for him. I'm not going to walk into 2024 and say, huh, he's been terrible. He hasn't been good in a few years. I'm crossing him off. I won't do it because he's had too much success in this league at a position that's almost impossible to have that kind of success. You just don't see it often.
Right.
And he's not old. Hasn't lost a lot of athletic ability, if any. He just simply looked rusty. It was a lot of change at once. And so I'm still entering 2024 with the amount of optimism that I had for him when the Browns traded for him. Last year didn't sway that. If we don't see a step up this season, then I think you have to start, you know, ringing the alarm bells.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Last one, two, the Browns tackles.
Yeah, yeah.
Jedrick Wills, you know, we've had debate about Jedrick Wills here. Some people like him more than others. I'm not very high on Jedrick Wills. I feel like he's been a borderline bust for a first round. I would not extend him after this year. You know, conversely, I love what I saw from DeJuan Jones, who was a fourth or fifth round pick at right tackle. Yeah. I know he's big. He's probably injury prone at his size, but I thought he did a great job. What do you think about the future of both of those guys? And can DeJuan Jones play left tackle down the line if they needed him to?
Good question there. DeJuan Jones has rare size, and in a league of big freaks, he stands out. And he's a guy. Yeah. He's a guy that can do it all. He was a basketball player, a high level AAU basketball player in high school. And so, do I think he has the ability, kind of like what Orlando Brown has done, formerly of the Chiefs, formerly of the Ravens, now of the Chiefs, where he's not athletic enough, quote, to play left tackle, but he's big enough to hide some of those issues. So I do think that he can play on the left side. But Jedrick Wills, to me, I think this is going to be the last year you see. And don't cross off tackle in the draft for this year, so that they could potentially solve that issue for next year. That's part of what the draft is all about. So I am on the kind of same page as you, that this might be the last time we see Jedrick Wills in a Browns uniform.
And finally, Nick Chubb, how you feeling about him? I mean, he's approaching that age where running backs start to go downhill, devastating knee injury. He is the most popular Browns player in forever. The fans adore him, love him. He's been a great player. I mean, without a moment doubt, when he's been healthy, what would your expectations be for him this year?
Knowing the person, I think you're going to see the Nick Chubb of old, just because of what he has been through in his life. He's already been through adversity. He's already proven he can bounce back from serious injury. Yes, it's a violent position. Is he going to be the top level Nick Chubb that we've seen in the past? No, but you know, I like to gamble on people that have the intangibles of a Nick Chubb. So if I'm a Browns fan, I'm not overly concerned about that.
David, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Thank you. It was great to meet you, Adam.
You're in the bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.
Great stuff with David Syvertson. Really great insight from him on, and it was interesting what he said about Deshaun Watson. He hasn't changed his thoughts on him at all. But it'll change after this year. He believes in Nick Chubb. And he's looking to interior defensive line for the Browns at 54 in this year's draft. By the way, if you're not doing so already, please make sure you're using the Bet Rivers app. You can bet on anything. Great deals. My parlay is coming every Tuesday. Now, I did lose my parlay yesterday. I apologize for letting you down. My two-game parlay winning streak is over. I'll try to get back on track Friday. That's it for now. Thanks to Brian Monzo for producing. Thanks to all of you for watching and listening. Please hit the subscribe and like buttons. I'll talk to you next time. The live show, Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. Mary Kay Cabot is going to join me live at 2:15 on draft day. That's all coming up. Plus, I'll have a Cavs post-game reaction on Thursday night as well after game 3 of the NBA playoffs for the Cavs. We'll talk to you next time. Where else? But right here in the bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by Bet Rivers. See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.